Welcome to The Talkies, a weekly film podcast with me, Lucy Smith.
And me, Michael Henry.
This week, we'll be discussing cinematography. Yeah, it occurred to me, I've learnt a lot this week because I didn't really think about cinematography at all and didn't really know what it meant. I think it would be easier if we said, this week we'll be talking about visual storytelling, and I'd have been like, cool. Is that just a fancy name for that, would you say?
In a way, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to break it down like Latin or anything, but it's basically, yeah, cinematography, the difference, you know, photography is stills, but cinematography would mean the movement of images and, yeah, moving images. I'm not going to make it any more elaborate than that. It is visual, it's telling a story visually, definitely. But there's always more, like to be honest, past couple of years, I've learned so much more that it isn't just one person's job, for instance. It isn't just the DOP or the cinematographer or whatever they prefer to be called. It isn't just them. It's all kinds of things on top of that, like costume, production design, color palettes. It's everything that isn't just light and framing.
Right. And they all have to agree. Is it the director's job to establish like the mood of everything? And
yeah, but I mean, speaking from experience, I would be open more to someone bringing me ideas rather than me going to them saying, this must be a blue dress, for instance. Like, unless you have a very specific idea, I think it's probably best to ask people their opinions, and because they know more than you do. Like, you know, a costume designer or a production designer would know a lot more about the effect of a navy blue, for instance. I feel like that's going to get very boring if I carry on talking about that stuff.
No, I get you, though. Yeah, they all know their jobs, and yeah, so yeah. The idea is they bring new ideas to the whole thing.
Definitely, yeah. Sorry, go on.
Cinematographer is so good at their job that they sort of dictate all that. Is the director's only role then to like focus on the actors, or is it not that simple?
I guess in the best case scenario that would be true, and I think you hear stories of the cinematographer I'm going to talk about. He's worked with some of the best directors around, and they have a dynamic where it's, they'll talk beforehand, before the shoot, and get a lot of planning out and say, this is the style we want to go for, these are the kind of colours and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to the actual shoot, yeah, it's very much, here's what I want it to be, go do your thing. I think, you know, if you're working with someone who's one of the best in their field, you don't really want to sound...
Step
you don't want
on
to,
that.
Yeah, you don't want to step on toes, but you also don't want to make it seem like you know more than you do, because they're there because they're better than you, basically. Like, you should be working with people who know more than you, I think, especially with this kind of role.
Okay.
So is it only a recent thing you started to notice, not just the role of a cinematographer, but I guess we've talked about it before, where you said you would know you're watching a Tim Burton film, for instance. Like, you must have noticed the cinematography, even if you didn't know the vocabulary for it, I guess.
That's exactly it, I think. I've probably noticed these things all my life, as has everyone, but like a bit unconsciously. You say recent, it's very recent. It's like in the last week when I've been looking up what cinematography is and thinking about it and then watching films with that head. That's the only time I've noticed it. And you know American Honey, my pick, that is filmed with handheld cameras? I did not notice that until you said it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's something that I don't notice at all, but I'm realising, I already knew, I think, it's what makes a film good or bad for me, is whether I can...
Well, definitely, like, because like you say, it's visual storytelling, you should really be, every shot should be telling a story without saying anything, and then it's the cut that kind of makes a formula, in a way. Mm. I wanted to ask, like, can you think of any singular shots from films that have stood out for you in the past?
Yeah, lots. When I was talking about that, the one thing was like the Dead Poets Society. I can still picture him like running in the snow and stuff.
Oh, the really wide shot where he's like right at the bottom of the frame.
Yeah. Stuff like that.
It's interesting. Like, I think it's interesting that I think when I first started studying film, I kind of started to get a rough understanding of what it was, but it's like I say, I feel like I'm still learning about it, like regularly, almost like weekly. I'll be watching something like Boardwalk Empire, and I'll be trying to break down, like, why did they put the light there and why have they framed it this way, and things that I think I know what's good and what isn't, and you kind of bring that to my own stuff, but I'm still learning why.
Yeah, it feels like the importance of you can't ever learn it all. Like, it's,
well, I would say the only people who can are the people that we're talking about this week. So,
but as in, you can't just learn how an image makes a human feel. You just feel it. So there's no like, I finished the textbook on it. Surely.
Well, I feel like that's kind of the problem in some ways. Is there's a lot of YouTube tutorials, and it's basically like how to set up a shot and make it look cinematic, rather than what's, you know, the intention behind every single shot should be different. But I mean, I'm guilty of doing this, especially in my first few films, that it's like you think you know the basic tools, and you go, I'll use a mid shot and I'll add a backlight so it's quite shadowy, but then that's, you just, it looks the same as another scene in your film, and it looks the same as other films, rather than being unique to that moment and, like you've said, telling it visually.
Although, to be fair, in most films you gotta have majority of normal shots, otherwise the gems won't be the gems anymore.
Well, that's something I wanted to talk about, really, was because I'm undecided on this. I think, like, do you think a film should, like, the shot should stand out, or it should be functional?
Yeah, this is what I feel our films are asking, like our picks this week. Because a lot of the time with your pick, Assassination of Jesse James, I loved, like, especially towards the start when I was properly, like, paying attention to every single shot, or maybe they were too. It's very much like things that I'd never seen, especially in a Western before. You got to do that right, I think, as well. And
yeah,
I was loving that almost every shot felt new. But some of the things they did, it was too in my face. I could have done without the weird blurry edged thing that comes on in the narration.
I think it's a Marmite thing for a lot of people. I personally love that, but I can see why. This is basically going back to my question, is I feel like sometimes it can be distracting, and that's kind of that's where I'm still torn. I don't know if I have like a definitive answer on this, but I like seeing a shot and going, wow, like, I've not seen that before. But then if every single shot in a film was like that, I wouldn't be engaged. I'd be too self-aware of what I'm watching, which I think, I'd argue Assassination of Jesse James, which I'll introduce properly in a second, I'd argue it walks the line really well, in that there's a lot of beautiful shots and unique choices, but it's only during the prologue and narration. It's never in scenes where it's like five people talking, for instance, or a conversation. Like, there's no weird angles when it's not unnecessary. Yeah. Like, it's functional when it needs to be, and then
but it's a very good in a kind of version of functional as well. Like, I noticed in the scenes where there's a lot of people talking, they where the camera is really clever as well. So it's always done well, I think. Yeah. Do you want to introduce your pick?
I love talking about this film for starters. Like, so The Assassination of Jesse James is kind of a revisionist Western. It doesn't feel like heroes and villains. It feels like this epic breaking down of a myth and showing the mundanity of what we've grown to expect to be really big and kind of beautiful, which this film is in places, but it's very, very character driven, very subtle and human, which you don't really, like I say, you don't, as much as I love Once Upon a Time in the West, that's not what I'm getting from that experience. But the cinematographer behind this is arguably one of the best of all time. His name's Roger Deakins. He's shot pretty much the best looking films you can ever think of. So he's worked with the Coen brothers, so No Country for Old Men, Fargo, Skyfall and 1917 are quite recent ones, but I don't think they're as good as the Coen brothers films. But he's someone who, he has his own website, and he opens it up to questions, and he works in a very practical way. It's never like, this film is probably a rare thing where he does show off a little bit in some places, but pretty much all of his films, he's always said it's in service of the story. It should be functional, the highest quality of function, rather than, you know, not just generic. I'm not definitely describing that very well.
No, that makes sense, though. Like, anything that's an aid, it's a film. It's not a moving image just to watch. It's a story. So anything in aid of that should never be properly noticed. I remember a friend who did music, who did like music for a theatre production, asked at the end, did anyone notice the music? And no one really did. And like, she took that as a win. Like, it should always just aid it.
Yeah. And I'm starting to realize that the things I appreciate most are the ones where we've talked about this before with directing, that, you know, if you're watching Tarantino, it's constantly reminding you that he made it.
Yeah.
Whereas I would say this film and your film in particular, everything that makes it so good is made egoless. It's very much like, I don't feel directed when I watch a film like American Honey by Andrea Arnold, because
yeah,
it's done so subtly, and it's done so with such care and kindness. Whereas there are a lot of films where you watch and go, wow, look at that. That's pretty much all you're like, especially a lot of big budget films. It's very much throw everything at the screen rather than what's best for this shot or this moment. Yeah.
And the reason why the egoless ones are so much better is because we get to put ourselves in it. If the director like tells you too much, it's boring. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, keep introducing your film for people who haven't watched it.
For anyone who hasn't watched it, Jesse James is renowned as being, he's kind of like one of the first major celebrities in a way in the West. And it kind of unpacks that a lot, which is kind of what it is to be a celebrity and having to live with the image of yourself in public life, I guess. And so the full title is The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. And so it's those two characters. Robert Ford is very much like a weaselly, basically like a teenage brat in many ways, and he idolizes Jesse James and obviously assassinates him at the end. It's no huge spoiler. The film continues after the assassination, and you start to realize the effect it has on that person's life, and he kind of gets to experience the worst side of celebrity, because he's known as being the coward and not being a hero, essentially. I don't want to get too much into like what it's about and all this kind of stuff, because obviously we're focusing on the visuals this week. One thing I'd like to know is, do you think you'd be able to tell if this cinematographer had shot another film? Like, if you were watching, I'm trying to think of a good example, like No Country for Old Men, do you think you'd be able to tell it's the same cinematographer?
No, because I'm not watching out for it.
Well,
I might suspect, but purely because of the sort of the theme of how it looks. I love... What might be his signature is, I love the care you can see that's put into it. It's like one shot in particular, it's like they're about to rob a train, and we've all seen so many train robberies.
I'm so glad you've brought that up.
Yeah.
It's the best sequence. It's so good.
What I loved, the shot that I loved is just his foot on the rail and it starts shaking and they know it's about to start. But it was just like, number one, beautiful shot. Number two... like, I felt it. For the first time, I actually felt something new about watching a train robbery. You know, like, we've seen so many... it's like a video game in most Westerns. We're just watching it happen. But I felt the, like, oh, this is about to happen. Like, yeah, that made me sit up.
It's very immersive. But it's also beautiful, too. Like, I mean, we talk about this walking the line of function versus beauty. But that is, like, it's so beautiful. It's only lit by the light on the front of the train, so... when it starts to turn the corner and you start to see the people who are hiding in the forest, the shadows behind the trees, it's hard to describe on a podcast, obviously, how beautiful something can look. But I remember the first time I watched it, and when that sequence happened, I was like, it's only about 20 minutes in, I think, or 15 minutes. I remember just sitting up and going, oh, okay, it's this kind of film. Like, you're going to do something I've never seen before.
Yeah. But you do notice the choices, though, throughout, and like... I think with transitions and stuff, like fade outs and things, I did notice occasionally I felt the camera, a small voice going, look at me, I'm clever. Yeah.
And I think it is quite a self-aware film as well. Like, the guy who directed it, Andrew Dominik, is kind of renowned for using techniques. Like the sped up shots of the sky, for instance, like, you don't look at that and think, I'm really immersed. You look at it and start thinking about what you're watching and thinking about the story.
The narrator brings you out too, so I get that it's all a device, and it did work together really well.
So I feel like we should move on to your pick, and then we'll start comparing the different styles a bit. So do you want to introduce Your pick?
Yeah, this is one of my top favourite films ever. It's American Honey, directed by Andrea Arnold. And it's basically a big sort of road trip, coming of age in a way. It's I don't know how old she is, late teens maybe?
Looks about 18, I think, yeah.
Yeah, she's a girl sort of stuck in a bad place and sees this group of magazine sellers who sort of swoop into her life and quite likes the look of Shia LaBeouf. I'm really describing this very wrong. And
I feel like the problem as well is that to both of our picks, really, is you can't really describe how good they are because you're right, it is a road trip and she, you know, joins these sales people. But that doesn't do justice at all to how open and how much freedom there is to this.
I've got it on DVD now and I've watched it many, many times, and every time I get the same like euphoric feeling after watching it. It captures so much. This is the first time I watched it looking at what the camera did. And I did notice that throughout, they do a lot of shots of nature, but a lot of the shots are things like her helping a wasp or like, I don't know, all these little things are like birds. It'll focus on a bird that finally like flaps free of the tree or something like that. And like, I think the whole, the cinematographer was capturing like the story or like hope through those little bits.
Yeah, and it's got like a documentary feel to it as well. Like it feels very captured rather than set up. I mean, it was as well. Like there's a lot of things that happen in this film that just weren't in the script. Apparently it was very much an outline. And I know that Andrea Arnold, I only know this from Fish Tank. I'm assuming she still does it, but she'll make sure they shoot in sequence. So it's like day one is scene one and day two is like scene three. Like you do it in order and everyone kind of feels this natural progression.
Yeah, and I get that.
I mean, it's interesting you've picked a film which I normally really hate handheld, mostly because it's kind of used like people shake the camera to make it feel realistic, but I don't feel like Andrea Arnold does that. It's always used effectively.
It's interesting.
Intentionally,
it's like
as well.
It goes a lot with the like they're almost always drunk or high, and it definitely like sets you in the you're another character in there almost.
Yeah.
And it kind of struck me that like to be a good cinematographer, I think you need to have a really special way of looking at the world. Like you got to think about the world around you and then share your eyes like. It feels like another character almost if you do it right, where you look and.
Yeah, it's interesting what you just said, because I think the difference between our cinematographer picks, I feel like I know when I'm watching a Roger Deakins shot film, but with Robbie Ryan who shot American Honey, he also shot Marriage Story and The Favourite, which all three of those films look completely different, and I feel like that's more interesting in some ways. Like Roger Deakins is. Become a specialist of a very specific type of formal craft, let's say, whereas Robbie Ryan is kind of a chameleon. Like it seems like he could approach any film and adapt to the style of what the film needs to be.
That's great. I mean, like I wouldn't have said they need a special way of looking and that is the only way to look. Like we all look differently in different moods anyway at the world, so I really like that. Yeah.
Would you be surprised to hear that he also shot Red Road, which looks nothing like this film?
No, because he worked with the same person.
Okay, yeah, I guess it's not shocking. But I feel like this is such a beautiful film because, like I say, I don't normally like handheld, but this works because it's with purpose. But also, it doesn't really look like any other film I can think of off the top of my head. It's highly saturated. There's lots of warm colours and greens and... It's very, I don't know if vibrant's the right word, but it's very, like you say, the natural world's there a lot and it just kind of glows in a way.
It sort of clashes natural world and city and like being on the bus really well as well. I agree.
Yeah, whereas Jesse James is very almost monochromatic, almost black and white in places. It's quite subdued.
I have a question about your films.
Yes.
Because... I know you're the director, but I'm guessing low budget, you're also the cinematographer, right?
No. I mean, no? Yes. Okay. Up until our last film, I was basically shooting my own stuff or would have a camera up. But Anhedonia was great in so many ways, because meeting Andy Tuvey, he basically, we had a lot of discussions before, but his expertise with lighting indoors in particular added so much more value to the film. And yeah, he added his own sense to it, which I think is opened me up a lot more to well, trusting collaborators, definitely. But
I guess my question then is, before that, or when you picture your films for yourself, because like American Honey woke me up to someone else showing me what they look at and how they see the world, would you say your films, does the camera look how you look at the world, or do you change it up?
It varies ever so slightly from film to film, but I do feel like, I mean, it's hard to be objective, but I do feel like my view comes across through it, even if it's someone else shooting it. I mean, it's to its detriment sometimes. Like, there'll be things where I feel like it's too formal when I wanted to experiment, or it's, I feel like I've seen it before when I would have liked to experiment more, or let someone, I don't know, it's a fine line of, you know, how much control you have of these things. But with the next film I'm working on, I'm being a lot more, not strict, but like very precise earlier on, rather than trying to find things on the day. Yeah, does that answer the question?
I guess I was asking more about the way your eyes literally see the world, and do you feel that in your films, or does it warp it to put it on camera?
Yeah, I mean, you can't, I feel like the only issue with trying to make a film is you can't really show what you've got in your head. Like, it's never as good as what you've imagined.
But you can choose where you point a camera and what you focus on. Do you feel that reflects what you would focus on were you there as a character? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm going to say yes, but only recently. I'm going to say with the last film, and definitely with the next one, because I've done the shot list for the next film recently. I feel like I'm moving my head around a lot, and I'm always looking at things like a little dog, basically. And yeah, I feel like the pace at which we look at things is something that I'm getting into the next film, definitely. Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't know if I've got the answer, to be honest.
Yeah. One thing I really liked about American Honey, there's a lot of scenes on a bus, right? And they're usually just rapping and that's it. But I'm never bored. Some people might be, I don't know. But who the camera chooses to look at, and like even the back of someone's head and stuff, it just, yeah, tells the story so well. And I noticed in like the second to last scene in American Honey, the camera stops focusing on Star's point of view.
Yeah.
It's sort of like they're all singing American Honey, which is what it was named after. And you sort of go into their heads a little bit. That's not a good way to phrase it.
I feel like she becomes part of the group, and then therefore it's not just focusing on one thing, it's focusing on the ensemble.
Yeah, and I stopped worrying about her because of that. And yeah, just noticing how tiny little things like that, literally a camera. And with handheld, it's so much easier to have like natural conversations happen. Like you're shakily holding it in front of someone's face as they're walking, and someone can very easily butt into shot simply by stepping once to the side to like talk to them. You don't have to pan the camera. I thought it was a really clever way of, it really suited this film.
I feel like it's very rare that it always works. Like American Honey, it definitely works. But I think in some ways, like it's almost magical that it works, because there's a lot of unprepared things in this. And I think some people might even argue that, I mean, if you're a specialist or a cinematographer, you might even argue that there's less intention behind each shot, so therefore it's not as good, which I don't think is true. I think it matches the content. But I think because it's less prepared and less trained, I mean, a shot from Assassination Jesse James, if you put it alongside some shots, not all shots, there's definitely some standouts in American Honey, but some shots where people are just walking, for instance, they may not hold up as quite as good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, yeah. What's the cinematographer's job? Is it to get good shots for the posters, or is it to, I don't know.
Hopefully it's a bit more.
More than that.
Yeah, I think it's a very technical role. I think that's one thing is, you know, if I was going to get the cinematographer of, say, Casino, which is a film I considered picking this week, he blasts certain things in the frame with light, so they kind of glow, but it looks unnatural. I would, if I knew that's what I wanted for my film, I'd be picking that. I mean, if I could pick that a cinematographer. Whereas, you know, Robbie Ryan, for instance, or Deakins, you'd kind of know what you're getting. You kind of get someone who's very classically trained and has perfected a certain type of thing. One thing I wanted to ask you is, basically this week I opened up what we were talking about to a few friends and said, what kind of thing would you like discussed? And I had some great questions, which I don't think we'll be able to cover all of them. But one thing I'm curious about is, because obviously films have moved from stock of film to digital over the past 20 years or so, and particularly the last 5 years, it's kind of unheard of. You probably have 1%, maybe 0.5% of films actually shot on film anymore. Is that something that, as an audience member, you think you'd be able to, that you've noticed, or do you not see a difference at all as an audience member?
I definitely see a difference. It's really hard to, like, I think a lot of people actually, right, I guess living from, I was, you know, born in the 90s, live until now, obviously. And, and yeah, I can tell when something was shot on film, I'm pretty sure, but it's because it'll come on TV and I can guess the year it was made, and it's usually not that far off. And it's weird how I know, other than that, obviously, like, some really old ones are grainy or whatever. It's hard, and I think it's choice of shot and edits and how people are acting, and obviously all of it goes into it. But
and there are films that are shot digital that look old or look filmic, and vice versa, not vice versa, but there's also modern films. Like, there's a film last year called Bait, which was shot like really, I think it's like 8mm prints, which is very grainy, very old looking. So some people still are doing this, but I mean, there was a huge debate saying, like, purists saying it'll never look as good, and it's a different type of image, that's for sure. But I feel like, especially the past 5 years, digital's got so good that it doesn't really matter as much anymore. It's a better tool. There's more you can do with it, I think.
Yeah, I don't tell the difference in that I'm thinking, not going to watch this, it's bad quality. No, that never goes through my mind.
I guess aging, like you've said, is one thing you kind of notice, that you could pick the era because it looks a certain way,
Yeah, but that's just my curiosity.
Another thing I wanted to ask was, this is based on other people's questions, do you notice a difference between mainstream westernised, like Hollywood films, and independent or world cinema? Because obviously you're open to watching subtitled films. Do you think there's a noticeable difference in terms of how they look?
Yes, and I think it goes back to what we were saying before. Like, there's a cinematographer that literally probably their job is to make it look like every other film so that no one has to worry. And there's ones which want...
Yeah, especially in the West.
Yeah. There's ones that want to show you something different, show you images and make you think things you haven't thought. So, yeah, that's,
I feel like
that's why I watch independent.
It's very rare in the Western world to have people take those chances. Like, I mean, Parasite's a good example. It felt like a very Western film in that it was quite natural. Not natural, but very formal.
Mm.
Whereas, I mean, you've picked some great examples in previous weeks, like Last Black Man in San Francisco is arguably one of the most original looking films to come out of America, basically. And American Honey too. Like, they don't feel like the kind of sanitized, regular like shot sizes and this kind of thing. It's very much...
But again, it's weird you say that, because I need to watch Last Black Man in San Francisco thinking about the camera now, because it's literally something that fades into the background, but it will have added to my feeling of this is something special.
I apologise, because I feel like in some ways I may have ruined films for you now, because that's something that someone told me at uni, was like, right, here we are, we're going to ruin films for you, because once you start picking them apart, you find it hard to watch a bad film that you didn't realise was bad, for instance.
Yeah.
Like, I'm at a point now where, especially because I'm planning my next film, that I'll watch something, and if it cuts unnecessarily, I'll probably turn it off. I'm like, why are you cutting now? There's no need to be cutting.
I think I'll be able to turn that off. I turn it off with bad writing. And one more note about Assassination of Jesse James. I thought the writing was absolutely beautiful. It was not really script writing. It was the narration bits that was just some of those sentences.
Oh, the narration's unlike any other narration I've ever... It's like a omnipresent but third person. I don't know how to describe it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's not like normal narrator's voice, but just some of the words they, like, they said something like, his kids didn't know his names, but they remember his legs and the sting of his mustache, stuff like that. Yeah. I was like, oh yeah.
It, for me, that's a film that ticks all the boxes. Like, as far as I'm concerned, we won't get into like how much we like it or anything, but for me, it's a flawless film. Like, sound, music, cinematography, acting, directing, story, right? Just everything is. You couldn't have made that a better film. Like, even, some people think it's a bit too long. I disagree. I think it needs to slow down in the last third. Anyway, well, do you feel like you have a better understanding of what cinematography is now? I guess is a best, is a good place
yes.
to end. Great. I mean, you realise it isn't just one person as well, I think, at this point. That.
Yeah, I'm still a bit confused. What if, like, there's a lighting person who's amazing, probably better than the cinematographer, and they, like, decide the lighting for the whole film? Does that get...
That doesn't happen. Oh. They'd get fired. Basically, if you're in charge of... If you're a lighting assistant and you start telling Roger Deakins how to light his set, he'd probably fire you, I think.
Okay, so there is no head of these things. So the cinematographer dictates stuff to the costume and lighting and all that.
Yeah, like there's loads of mini hierarchies on film. And
okay.
Another term for cinematographer is director of photography. So it is their micro... So they get to manage a group of people. So costume would have people working underneath them. Sound, editing as well. You'd have assistants, this kind of thing. It's the basic hierarchy of a film would be director has the creative choices, and then underneath them you have like director of photography, and they work with other departments too, like production design and costume, all this kind of stuff. But they do have a big amount of say, but people work for them essentially.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I think I understand the role, but yeah, most importantly, it's just literally what you see on screen, and if they're good or not is dictated on whether you feel like you're seeing something new, for me anyway. Thank you for listening to The Talkies. This week we were discussing cinematography. Let us know what you think, we'd love to hear from you, and don't forget to tune in next week.